So on the line we have Josh Creaser, who is with 350.org, and as we said, we're going to be interviewing him to talk about their campaign against AGL. Hello, Josh.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Listeners should also know Josh was also the winner of the 2016 Young Environmentalist of the Year. But who gave that award again?
Yeah, who did give that, Josh?
That was Bob Brown.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So you got the Bob Brown Award or something.
Brown Award.
All right. I guess the first sort of question is kind of like, you know, telling us about this campaign that 350.org is running against AGL, and could sort of give the background of, you know, how it started and, you know, what just about AGL in general.
Yeah, sure. So look, AGL Energy is Australia's biggest electricity company. They're also Australia's biggest carbon polluter, and by a long margin. So, you know, AGL, when we're thinking about dealing with Australia's, you know, climate change impact, they really need to be one of the companies we pay the most attention to. And AGL kind of brands itself, sells itself to its customers as this clean and green company. But in fact, over 80% of the energy it produces comes from fossil fuels. And it plans to keep burning coal and gas till 2050, which is just far too long, given the kind of climate change impacts we're seeing right across Australia, be it the enhanced bleaching of the Great Barrier Reef, be it more and more severe bushfires, be it more and more severe storms, such as the one we saw recently in South Australia. So 350's campaign is about calling out AGL's bid and greenwashing, and informing the community, informing their customers about the impact this company is having. And we're building a kind of nationwide network of community groups that are taking action and putting pressure on AGL to clean up its act.
Mm. Zane, do you have a question?
I'm just wondering what sort of fossil fuel assets are in AGL's portfolio in terms of gas and power stations and stuff?
Yeah, so the three big dirty power stations are Bayswater and Liddell in the Hunter Valley.
Yeah.
Just outside the town of Muswellbrook. Bayswater, when it comes to air pollution, is one of the dirtiest power stations in Australia. It spews out millions of tons of fine particulate matter, sulfur dioxide, mercury, hydrochloric acid, so on and so forth. So it's not only a scary one when it comes to climate change, but also in terms of its health impacts.
Mm. Yeah, it's the filthy other, stuff.
That's right. Mm. The other power station is a Loy Yang in the Latrobe Valley, which is burning brown coal, which, you know, is some of the dirtiest coal on the planet. AGL also owns a few gas power stations, and the Camden Gas Project in Sydney, just outside of Sydney, which is the biggest gas project in New South Wales. Mm. And the community there have been fighting that coal seam gas project for a long time. They're really concerned about the health impacts from leaking wells on their families. The wells are very close to their houses. Mm. AGL has a kind of commitment to supposedly close them by 2023, but they have no detail of how they're going to do that. And they want it to happen as quickly as possible. So, there's many kind of different reasons to be concerned about AGL, not only their climate change impacts, but also those community and health impacts that the company has as well.
Yeah. You mentioned something about greenwashing that AGL apparently does. And so can you tell us a bit more about, in more detail, about kind of what are kind of the practices they kind of do to sort of absolve themselves of sort of responsibility, to make them, like, to create this illusion that they're participating in, say, environmental sustainability, which is, yeah, but they're actually kind of like the biggest polluters?
Yeah, it's a great question. And AGL have done this so very well. It's amazing how many people, even, across some environment groups, who are kind of surprised to hear that AGL is such a big part of the problem in Australia. So it's true that AGL does produce some renewable energy. About 20% of their portfolio is from wind or solar. But if you looked at, you know, their marketing to their customers, if you looked at their website, If you heard their chairman and CEO speak in their AGM, there's basically no mention of the coal or the gas. It's all about renewables, and they kind of fail to acknowledge that the company is still by far away a fossil fuel company and plans to burn those fossil fuels till at least 2050, if not longer. So that's the kind of, you know, tension hypocrisy that we're pulling out in this campaign. And, yeah, we're finding when we talk to customers or people in the community who, you know, have seen AGL's marketing, have kind of, I guess, believed the spin, they've been pretty shocked to learn, you know, kind of AGL's dirty secrets, to learn a bit more of the truth.
Hmm. And what's, what would 350 think is a good alternate corporate strategy or whatever for AGL? Like, what are you suggesting this company does?
So we're saying that AGL needs to be out of fossil fuels within 10 years, by the end of 2025, and that needs to look like not only shutting down their coal power stations and their gas power stations and projects, but also having full, like, decommissioning and rehabilitation plans for those sites to ensure that, you know, there isn't, like, a toxic legacy left for the communities near those sites, and also to ensure that AGL works with local, state, federal governments to have transition and support plans for the workers and communities that live near or work in those power stations or on those gas projects. We can't have a situation where, as the inevitable transition happens to renewable energy, big polluting companies like AGL just get to walk away from their power stations, their gas projects, and not be involved in paying for and ensuring that they clean up their mess and support communities. So, those two things are very important that we tie together, both the quick closure of fossil fuel projects in line with the climate crisis, but also ensuring that the shutdown is done well, there's a proper cleanup.
Yeah. Actually, that kind of makes me think sort of what you the alternative you could you put forward is kind of like basically, you know, you could end up in a situation where, say, for example, that AGL basically sort of closes shop on all their fossil fuel all the sort of work they do in fossil fuels, but they sort of, the company goes down under, the workers sort of lose all their jobs, but all the sort of shareholders sort of get away with accumulating sort of all the profits that they've made previously. Mm-hmm. Sort of like this happened in Australia recently with, say, Dick Smith, where, you know, Dick Smith completely shut down, just workers lost all the jobs, but of course all the people, all the owners, I think, generally benefited because they were able to, and that's this sort of idea of a just transition is actually a really good one. So that you don't just have workers losing their jobs. Of course, it'd be a good thing if those coal mines are going down, but it'd be a bit of a downer if it was at the consequence of all these workers losing their well-being, their means to live.
That's absolutely right, and I guess that's why there is an important role that the government should be playing in this space. You know, the government should be looking at policies for the whole energy sector to support this transition, so that whether it's AGL, whether it's Origin, whether it's Energy Australia, there's actually policy mandating that they have to be putting up the right amount of money for the decommissioning and rehabilitation to ensure that there's support programs, transition programs for those communities and workers, and that, as you say, the kind of the company, the shareholders don't just get to walk away with all the profits and leave behind all the destruction. And so that's why there needs to be a kind of movement-wide approach to this and pushing not only companies but also governments to clean up their act on the issue of energy transition. And we see that AGL is one important pillar in that campaign. AGL, not only can they clean up their own act and do this process better, but they should also be demanding that the government comes up with a really good and ambitious plan that applies not only to them but also their competitors.
Hmm. And in terms of profits, have you sort of done a profile on the sort of profits that AGL have been making in recent years?
Yeah. So AGL took a bit of a write down this year because of selling off or just stopping a number of proposed gas projects that they had on the cards, including the Gloucester project. So they did take a bit of a loss for that. They also made some bad decisions around the amount of gas they purchased and sold, and they were a bit short and had to buy a lot of expensive gas on the market. So they posted a bit of a loss for this year, but they claim their underlying profits continue to rise. And one of the reasons for that is that they've bought these coal power stations, so Bayswater and Liddell, they only bought in 2014. Mm. And because of how our economy works, because of how the policy works in this space, it is still very cheap for them to run those coal power stations because they get such cheap coal. They don't have to pay really for many of the externalities that they're pumping out into the environment, be it the carbon emissions or the toxic emissions that I was talking about before and have these health impacts. Because of the system we're in, it's still very cheap for them to produce that energy and then to sell it. So that has actually been a source of their rise in profits, underlying profits over the last couple of years is being sold those power stations. The other thing to point out here is that the New South Wales government sold them those power stations incredibly cheaply. And in a way, it's another almost element of the subsidy or the support that the state and federal governments have given to big power companies like AGL to continue producing dirty energy. These are stations and transmission lines that the state built, but then sold them to power companies for very cheap. The companies get to make profits for a few years, and then probably in their ideal world, they just get to kind of walk away from the project, as we were saying before, and not pay the full cleanup costs and leave that either to never be dealt with or to the taxpayer. But clearly, that needs to be stopped. There needs to be proper commitments from these companies to close down the plants responsibly, and then there needs to be policy from government to make sure that happens fairly.
Mm. And I think that's a real challenge for climate activists and coal and fossil fuel activists is we know that new build renewables are cheaper than new build fossil fuels, but the problem that we face is that it is still cheaper to keep shoveling coal into these old coal-fired power stations that, as you say, have been bought ridiculously or criminally cheap off state governments. That is actually cheaper than forking out for your new wind farms or for your new concentrating solar thermal plants, which haven't come down that cost curve yet like PV and wind have. And on the one hand, you'll make heaps of profit straight away. On the other hand, wind and solar are profitable, but you're looking at a long payback period to recoup your investment and then start generating a profit. And that's a real challenge. It's good to see 350 in this space really pushing on that point.
Yeah, look, that's right. And we need to do work as well to push up the cost of these power plants experience. They shouldn't be able to get away with pumping that CO2 into the atmosphere. We used to have a price on carbon. We don't anymore. But also, everyone should be taking a closer look at the various toxins that they're releasing into the environment in millions of tons every year and really not paying the price for that. That should not be allowed to go on. So I think there's opportunities to not only be putting kind of public and customer pressure on AGL and other power companies, we should also be looking at regulatory options as well to make sure that they're actually paying for the impact that they're having on the world around them. I think if we, if AGL had to factor in all of those costs that it's inflicting on the world, it would start to become very clear that these power stations are no longer profitable, particularly in comparison to wind and solar.
Mm. I guess moving away from this sort of, I want to kind of hear about, how the sort of campaign has been going and sort of what has 350.org, how you've been sort of connecting with community groups, what kind of actions have you been doing against AGL and what kind of sort of propaganda sort of you're using to sort of raise awareness about this issue and to push towards some kind of political action on AGL.
Yeah, great question. So Our website for the campaign is dirtyagl.com. That's a great kind of landing page for folks that are listening to get a sense of all the different angles of the campaign. And we really spell out, you know, the spin that AGL sells and what's actually the real story behind that spin. The campaign has had kind of many different arms at this stage, and it's really just the beginning of this work. We're going to continue building this pressure on AGL for at least the next year and beyond, up to the next AGM. So, but what has already happened, we've seen a number of groups popping up around the country that are talking with AGL customers, signing them onto the campaign and making them aware of the spin that AGL is selling. At the company's AGM in Sydney a couple of weeks ago, all of their shareholders and all their board members walked past a really big crowd outside the venue, and were met with stories from people who live in the Latrobe and Hunter Valleys, people who live in Camden, and people who are living with the impacts of climate change. So we had both a really kind of loud visual presence outside the AGM, but then also inside the AGM, a number of community members attended as proxies to the meeting and were able to ask questions about, you know, how AGL was, or how AGL could, you know, justify the impacts that they're having on the climate and on their health and on their community. We're also, engaging with major shareholders in AGL. So a lot of the super funds that Australians invest in are shareholders in AGL. So therefore, most Australians actually, you know, are investors in AGL. So that's another avenue through which people can become active, can put pressure on their super funds to demand AGL clean up its act. And we've been doing tours from Sydney to the Hunter Valley with our volunteers, with people that are interested to learn more about these power stations and what the impacts are for the people living in the Hunter and what a transition mean for that community. Those tours have been really popular, and we're definitely going to do more of those over the coming months and years, because I think building that, you know, city regional connection and understanding of the different ways that we approach this challenge of energy transition is really critical for us all being able to work well together in this space.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. dirtyagl.com. Check out that website. Thank you very much, Josh Creaser.
Yeah, that was a very, very informative interview.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, all right.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
Thanks so much. Okay, all the best.
You too. All right, Josh Creaser there from 350.org on the dirtyagl.com campaign.